Now, call it Lions and Gossips and Bears, oh my. That should make sense in a minute. But Gemma is going to open with a fact that she told me this morning. Gemma, go.
And asked them to put them in order of which one they thought was worse. And normal people, gossip was quite far down the list, obviously like murder and stuff was worse to them. Funnily enough, when they went in and asked inmates, most of them said gossip as the worst one at the top of the list.
All right. Thank you. Interesting. This is a sermon, not just on gossip, but on the danger of the misuse of the tongue. Now, one preacher asked his whole congregation at the start of a sermon on the tongue to stick their tongues out just to make sure we've all got one. But I won't do that. It's not just gossip. Listen to Ephesians 4. What else do we misuse our tongue for? Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up, that it may benefit those who listen. Here's another one, Ephesians 5. Among you, there should not even be a hint of sexual immorality, of any impurity, of greed, because that is improper for God's people. There should be no obscenity, foolish talk, coarse joking. Now, I think in the AV that says jesting which is not convenient. But in modern language, no coarse joking, which is out of place. But rather, this should be used for thanksgiving. If you're busy thanksgiving, you will be less busy doing those other things. Okay? There's two bad responses to a sermon on the misuse of the tongue. Here's bad response number one that no one should do tonight. We should not, therefore, think that we must never firmly talk to people or negatively talk to people, because that what will happen then is you'll all have pent up problems with each other, or you'll know something sinful is going on and you'll never tell the person to stop, because you'll be like, oh, I just need to be really nice all the time. In church we just got to be nice, man. No, rubbish. We got to admonish each other. Got to use your mouth for that. Okay, that's one. So yeah, we'll carry on doing that in the right spirit. The other bad response is that we all resolve not to gossip again, but we don't really know why we're resolving to not gossip again. We'll just close in prayer, Lord, help us not gossip. That's bad. Good luck with that. You'll last a day. We need to see why it's bad tonight. We need to realize this implement here should be used for care and love for one another. And when it is not, it is being unloving and uncaring to God's people. Okay? And Genesis 3 says we're made in His image. So it is actually an attack on Him when we attack His children. Imagine, my friends, that this church really is a place of love and care where you feel safe that people love you and want the best for you and are not going to stab you in the back. Imagine that. Okay, here's a quiz. Just read James 3, verse 7 and 8. We begin. Oh, and it's all over the place, the verses. Anyway, just start with James 3, 7 and 8. Ready? Then I'm going to ask you a question, a quiz. Let not that man... that's the wrong chapter. 7 and 8. For every kind of beast and bird, a reptile and creature of the sea is tamed, and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. Here's a question. Okay. Over there in the corner is is a lion. Right? A wild lion, which is broken out of Nantomoyle Zoo, and it's made its way into the corner over there. Over there is a harmless looking person, but they've got a nasty, nasty tongue. Right, you've just read those verses. Who can do more damage to a church? The lion or the innocent looking person with the nasty tongue? James says, well, hey, we can tame the lion. We can do that. We'll just get Caleb onto the lion. Sorted. But the person over there can destroy your church. Isn't that scary? There's a killer in church. Verse 6, just look. The tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. It's so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. There should be warning alarms in our hearts tonight. Now, the block of flats, where was it? Grenville. There was a fire. Okay, use that imagery now. James is painting a very vivid picture of churches that can be on fire and are on fire. Devastating fire rippling through churches. Thousands of churches burning to the ground with this flame. Barely anyone notices it and calls attention to it. Everybody has a go at homosexuals. Hardly anyone has a go at this one. But James is saying this is a fire ripping through churches. No one's called for an extinguisher. What is it? It's the tongue. It is serious, dangerous stuff. And of which we are all guilty. Now, start again at verse chapter 3. Here's a warning to teachers. My brothers, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. Now, I'm going to talk about myself first here. I got to watch my tongue. I can lead you astray. I'm a teacher. I can spread a fire through this congregation by the way I am. And you look at me and you go, well, he's no different. So here's a warning to me from God. Hey, there's going to be strict judgment on you. How you speak to people. What you say to people. Okay, here's a fact for me as a leader. I can ruin your life by the words I use. I can ruin my family's life if they see that I don't really believe what I'm saying. Because of the way I use this. I can ruin the life of this church. Okay? There is a strict warning. If my ship isn't being steered. And this is the rudder here. How we use this. But is it just me? Now, raise your hands if you're a pastor. Right, raise your hands if you're an elder. Raise your hands if you're a deacon. Okay? Raise your hands if you're in children's ministry. Okay, raise your hands if you're in student ministry. Okay, raise your hands if you're influential over children. Raise your hands if you're influential over colleagues. And sometimes you speak and they listen. Okay, raise your hands if you're a mum, a dad, a grandma, a grandpa, a blogger, a colleague. Right, okay. Do you really think that I'm not the only teacher in this room? Right, okay. So if we're all teachers, we're told tonight to watch what we say. Why? Because the Bible says the words of truth set people free. Right? So if we're speaking something and we have the gospel, we can speak about that and it can set people free, right? The word of truth sets people free. It can free people when they hear what we say about God. That's why there's a warning here. We can lead people up the garden path the wrong way if we don't control what we say. We are the witnesses to those children, to those colleagues. It's us and what we say. Right, okay. Okay, here's a question. Have we all mastered this? Verse 2. We all stumble. in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man. Right, is anyone perfect here? Have any of you not stumbled with how you use your tongue? Right, James says if you get that, you're basically perfect. Teleios. You've reached maturity, a perfection. Right, you've cracked it. Finally, you are like Christ. Well, guess what? If you want Christ-likeness, he's saying you've got to start with your tongue. Isn't it? That secret fire. Okay, more bad news. Oh, we've covered the wild animals in 7 and 8. Have you ever bitten anyone with poison? Right, okay. Have you ever sunk your teeth into someone and poisoned them with your teeth? No, but look at... Well, you might have done, I hope not. But look at verse 8. The tongue is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. I'll ask again. Have you ever sunk your teeth into anyone and poisoned them? Now, the Trojans. Do you remember the Trojan? Not the internet virus. The one with Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Well, right. So the Greeks, I think they're besieging a city, aren't they? Troy. For 10 years. They're trying to siege it and get in it. And then they come up with a plan. We'll pretend like we've lost. And they build, correct me if I'm wrong, a giant horse. And they pretend it's a victory trophy. You've won. And some of them pretend to sail off. But they've put loads of their best soldiers in the horse. And they sail off. And then the guy's inside. Okay, let's get our trophy. They open the doors and in they come. Right, the gates are open. And then that night, they sneak out the horse and they open then the gates of the city for the rest of the Greeks to come in. Okay, the whole city is exposed to the enemy. James is saying tonight, you can fight a million battles, but if this one isn't being fought, the enemy will come in. It will come in from the inside. This is top priority, how you speak about people and about God. It can catch like a wild fire, and it can be deadly. We can contribute to the damnation of people. Right, your friends, let's ask some personal questions. Your friends, colleagues, wife, children, do they see that Jesus has made no change in your life because you can't stop running people down or coarse jesting, flippant comments, being rude, filthy, loveless? Are your loved ones cynical about the church because when you're with them, you're cynical about the church? It is like a wild fire. Now, one commentator says this. Right, okay, all of us have the graces of God in our lives. Things that we should love about each other, okay? Basically, if I could put it like this, well, it's based on a commentator. Let's just take Jimmy or someone. Yeah, let's take Jimmy, I don't care. Right. Jimmy has his best day where qualities shine through, all right? Thanks be to God. And Jimmy also has his bad day. It's just an example. I could have said anyone, right? On his best day, we can say, oh, Jimmy, let me tell you about him. He's loving. Yeah. He's good. He's gracious. He's humble. he's kind. He's teachable. He's displaying fruit of the Spirit, which, you know, he went 30-something years and it wasn't there. Okay? And we can tell other people out from our hearts of love for Jimmy. We speak. Okay? Jimmy has a bad day, and if we and our hearts are bitter, self-righteous, judgmental, and envious, when Jimmy comes up in conversation, you'll talk about him on his worst day. Let me tell you about him. Let me tell you what he's failed to do this week. Let me tell you what he's said. Let me show you what he's really like. And you interpret all of the data about Jimmy in a negative light. All right, my friends, Christianity isn't about Jimmy on his good day or Jimmy on his bad day. Christianity is about Jesus. And it's all about his best day in our place. Okay? Making it our best day. So we got to be so careful about how we represent other people. Because they've got a saviour that died for them at their worst. All right, we're not naive about the sins of each other. But be careful how you tell stories of people in this church. Because people are watching and listening. Are they about people's negative points? Or are they about a saviour and his best day? And the joy about his best day becoming our best day? Think about Christ. Gossip more about Jesus Christ. Let that fill your heart. His best day for my worst day. What? Let that come out. Now, he then gives illustrations to hammer this point home. Now, any scholars among you? The first one was an animal. What animal was it? Should be knocking about somewhere in verse 3, is it? Yep. Now, ooh, where is it? He hammers this point home. Where's it gone?
Verse 3.
Oh, it is verse 3. Yeah, right. Okay, horse. Anybody ever ridden a horse?
Yeah.
Jimmy, you've ridden a horse?
Yes.
Ooh.
Bareback as well. On occasion, he's called Prince.
All right. Now, you steer a horse with the little thing in its mouth. Yeah, you get the illustration. Okay, what was the next one? A ship. Huge ship is controlled by what? In verse 4? A little rudder. And verse 5, the fire does not just affect us, but it can sweep, a little flame, can sweep through a kingdom in Ogmore Vale. Now, let me tell you another thing. The Bismarck. What's that?
A ship.
A ship. A Nazi ship. Caleb, do you know anything about the Bismarck?
Based off Ogmore
Bismarck,
who made Germany
then. There we... Look at the... Oh, Caleb. On your best day, Caleb, you're a whiz kid. Now... 1940, the Nazis have a ship, the Bismarck. Imagine the technology. It's stretching 825 feet. What's that, up to Nantomoyle from here? No. Where's 800 feet then? I'm not sure you should ridicule that so quickly. What, 825 feet? Yeah, okay. Well, that's Nantomoyle.
2 miles
up there? Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, okay, all right. 825 feet up. It was the largest battleship in the world. Right, it had 8 guns, which held shells 15 inches across, and 5 dozen or so other armaments and things like that. Okay, but its onboard targeting computer was so precise that it blew away the HMS Hood, which had been the pride of the Royal Navy, with one single shot. Okay. But it had a fatal weakness. What was the Bismarck's fatal weakness? The fatal weakness was a vulnerable rudder underneath the thermal exhaust port. Shouldn't have stuck it there. May 24th, 1941, in the darkness of night, the Royal Navy attacked the ship. But one torpedo hit that rudder, and the boat was severely disabled, attacked fiercely, defeated, and sunk. Okay? One little rudder. Okay. James is saying, we can be strong and forceful and influential in society, in church, successful, seemingly impenetrable, a leader of all sorts, but we are vulnerable with this, and it can be the one thing that undermines everything we do, our speech. Now think of this tiny kingdom in Ogmore Vale. How few of our friends and people come. Is it because they see no difference in us? Really, because of the way we talk, because of the way and the things that we join in with. And they're thinking, well, what do we need Christ for? They're no different to us. Someone said, when we gossip, we both tear down another person, but we also corrupt the mind of the listener who we're talking to. Some of us complain. If we complain about the difficult circumstances in life all the time, we impugn the sovereignty of God to our listeners. They think we think he's not in control. All right. And we tempt our listeners to do the same. Proverbs 13:3. Read Proverbs 13 when you get home. We won't do it now. It goes into the tongue. This is life and death here. Can hang on the speech that we use. So we can come, we can raise families in the church, pay our tithes, sing our songs. If we gossip or grudges in our heart underlay things, and we speak about people wrongly, our witness is pretty much shot, poisoned like a fire. Right, so Jesus gets involved in the subject, and he says, this is why you gossip, or this is why you hurt people with your mouth. From the heart, the mouth speaks. So if you set fire to people with your tongue, guess what? In your heart, you want to see them burning. That's the reality, isn't it? It is rooted in hatred. Now, I spoke to a Christian recently, and we mentioned somebody else. The first thing the person said as soon as the other person was mentioned was a horrible comment. It wasn't anyone in this church. Horrible. Not discerning for their good or concerned for prayer. It was just horrible. It served no godly purpose or growth. The first thing. So what's in that person's heart towards that person? It's not love, is it? We get pleasure from gossiping or lustful talk. Whatever it is, we get pleasure out of it. We can say all we like, I'm not going to hell, but we can unleash hell's fire on people. People made in God's image. People who Christ has brought into our lives and we're to call brothers and sisters. And if you're hateful with your tongue, your actions will follow as well. All right. Okay, I'm going to carry this bit on a minute. We can say this, well, my actions speak louder than my words. It's okay. It's not okay. James doesn't say that. You can say my words can be taken back, can they? I don't think James says that. Or you can say, I didn't really mean what I said. James is saying, no. Just read verse 12. It's a different story. Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives? Or a grapevine bear figs? No. No spring yields both salt water and fish. It's one or the other. It's love or it's hate. We got to choose our path tonight. It ought not to be so. So, what can we do then? If we love running people down to protect our own name, if we think someone's after us, we'll get in there first, assassinate their character. If we do all that stuff, what can we do? Well, really, we got to, in order to save our tongue, we got to lose our tongue. We got to kill our tongue. There's no point just saying, oh, well, I'll try to be careful what to say. No, no. We need to come back to God. Okay? And there are certain things we do as we close to help us in this situation. Okay. So we're going to think of God now as we wrap all this up. What's true of the Father or the God we follow? First of all, he means what he says. Okay? Think of that. He is faithful and his word is powerful. Think of that. But listen to this. His word is not controlled by evil desires. Get into his word and let that fill your heart and your mind. Listen to this. If I can put it like this. Idolize him. Idolize him. Here's why I say that. If you idolize others or they take up all your time and obsession, you can't stop Facebooking them, ringing them, hanging around them, you got a false view of them. And you'll want too much from people in church, whatever it is. And guess what happens if they let you down? You've been idolizing them. They are the person in your life which you're currently living for. If you expect too much of them, you'll destroy them when they let you down. Why? Because only one person ever, who's Jesus, is worthy of total idolizing. Isn't it? There's only one who we can totally entrust our obsession to. And only one who we can have confidence that they will not let us down. So stop looking to people. Look to God and idolize him this week. Make efforts to think about the beauty of God. It will change how you speak. The second thing we can do in vigilance. To come back to God is this: don't covet. Be content with what you've got. And every day, thank God for things in your life. Do it. Bible's always saying thanksgiving. Ephesians 5, thanksgiving. Ephesians 4, give thanks. Right. Think about how you should be in hell, even for how we murder people with our tongue. But we're not. Don't covet. Right. If you covet people and you're not content, guess what you're going to do? I want their boyfriend. I'm going to smash him. I am going to hack them down with my words because I'm jealous. They got a boyfriend and I haven't. All right. I want their house. I hate them. I want their health. I hate them. I want Brad Pitt's looks. I hate him. It leads you to jealousy. So don't covet. Every day this week, be thankful for things in your life above the hell that you deserve. And the next thing is, come to the cross every day and see the forgiveness that you've had from God and forgive others. Now, if someone sins against you, Matthew 18 says, don't gossip about them. It says, go up to them and talk to them about it. Now, if you do have issues with each other, don't harbor it. Talk to each other tonight. If you harbor resentment against anyone in Ogmore Vale or this church, you will poison them with your words. But if someone sins against you, you've got two options: bitterness, or talk it through, and forgiveness. Demons don't forgive, but God does. If you want to take part in demonic torment this week, just let bitterness fester in your heart. But God's way is to forgive one another. Ring them, text them, email them, meet them, sort out your problems like Christian brothers and sisters. Be at the cross and the forgiveness there daily. By the way, linked to this, stop spending so much time in soaps where there's nothing but bitterness. And watch apps like the Daily Mail News app, which is full of gossipy trash. Be so careful what's going in your eyes and festering in your heart. You won't be obsessed with forgiving and the forgiveness of Jesus if you're always reading gossipy trash or watching it on the TV. Right, Paul says in Ephesians, watch all bitterness and forgive one another as God and Christ forgave you. Oh, they've hurt me. Yeah, you've hurt Jesus. Now, they've really hurt me. Yeah, who do you think you are? You are just a sinner saved by grace, and they are too. Deal with it. Talk to them. Don't harbor it in your heart. Right, so we close. We're all feeling pretty convicted, I'd imagine. Let Jesus have the last word. Okay, so James starts by saying, has anyone stumbled here? Yeah, we have. Okay. Jesus did not stumble in any way with his tongue. And he goes to the cross to suffer and die for people who have stumbled in many ways. So the horrible, shameful things we've said of Jesus and of his people, let Jesus get the last word. And when he's hanging on the cross and he's atoning for the sins of his people, his last words are this: Father, forgive them. So there we are. We look to Jesus, the work of the cross, to penetrate and change our hearts. We are all sinners saved by grace. We're to forgive each other and watch what we say. For his name's sake, amen.